With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
Waking up and realizing that life goes beyond the house that you grew up in. When you're growing up in that house, that's all you know.
My parents were learning to be parents just as fast as I was learning how to be a person. So the mistakes and the tribulations that they went through is because they've never done this before. Entering adulthood, there's a time that you have to put down the anger. Like, you can't be angry for your childhood anymore. You have to parent yourself. I still have to be constantly reminded is that you are here, you are loved, you are valid. You don't have to be loud to be loved. You don't have to scream to be loved. You deserve it for just existing. It's not food, it's not water, but it is what every person needs to survive. You cannot exist on this planet as a functioning member of society without, like, unconditional love.
But you're awakening already, right? It's already happening. That's why you're here and why you're listening.
Nothing is broken in your world. Nothing needs to be changed. Nothing needs to be different. And yet everything is constantly changing because it is the inevitable nature of that which is eternal.
What I've come to realize in this endless searching for answers is that there really are none.
If you spend your whole life trying to get your act together, then what do you have? You have an act, right? Instead of a life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Figuring Shit Out. I am Vanessa Fontana, your host, and on this episode, we have a very special guest, another Fontana with us, my sister. Me and her recorded this episode the last time she came to visit me in New York City, and I am really excited to share it with you. It is a deep dive into two children of generational trauma living their lives and essentially living their lives in order to break free from it. To preface this episode, our experience as kids was very chaotic, but also very special because we had each other. We talk about this in the episode, but for background context, my sister is 3 years older than me and was adopted at birth by our parents, who are my biological parents. My sister's Black and was raised by a white family, and I've always known that the lens that we see life through is not the same for many reasons, but that being a very big reason, and I'm grateful to give voice to her perspective and honor her story in that aspect. We grew up in Florida under the same roof, and our parents were divorced. Our home life lacked a lot of stability, and at 15, my sister left home to live with our grandparents in West Virginia, where she faced a lot of outward racism for the first time in her life. I stayed in Florida and finished high school there, living with my dad, and at that point, our family had diverged. My sister and I found our way back to each other and rebuilt our relationship as the years went on after being separated. She is one of my best friends and will always be my closest companion and closest confidant, and I'm really excited to introduce you to her. On this episode, we talk a lot about what it's like to live in survival mode and then find your way out of it through learning how to reparent yourself, breaking generational cycles consciously, and how our respective childhoods, while difficult, shaped us to be who we are today. And I'm always very conscious of sharing these stories because they can be heavy and trauma is not easy to talk about or be open about, and many details on this episode aren't shared. But on Figuring Shit Out, I want you to know that there is no experience that you cannot get through, and that wisdom often comes from knowing pain intimately as part of life, but making the conscious choice to break free from letting it control you. So without further ado, enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Figuring Shit Out. I am Vanessa Fontana, and today's episode is very special. We have a very special guest. If you are new here, Figuring Shit Out is a collective undertaking of self-help, coming of age, and finding and healing yourself in a world of flux. We have my sister as our guest today. My sister, her name is Angelica Fontana, and Angelica, do you want to say a quick hello?
Hello, my name's Angelica. And when I was a child growing up, I used to tell people that Vanessa had a tail, like frequently. Like, my fun fact was my sister was born with a tail.
So this episode's going to be really different. I don't know if you can tell already, but me and my sister grew up in obviously the same house, but in very different houses at the same time. And there is sometimes a lot of curiosity into the happenings around understanding oneself deeply as it comes to creating your way in life and your environment. How it shapes you is a really important aspect of that. And I think our environment shaped us very greatly. And the way that me and my sister have grown to appreciate our sisterhood throughout it and outside of it is also really special. So I'm really grateful to have you here, and I'm really grateful to be talking to you, and we're just going to kind of see how this goes.
Yeah. I think it's also important to mention, we do have an age gap. I don't know if you've talked about it before, but we are 3 years and 3 months apart. So what you experienced, while we experienced the same childhood, I got to experience a little bit more of our parents in like kind of a different point of their
like
lives.
Because
I was with them for 3 years before you came on, and even probably I would say like 5 years before you started making actual memories. So like the people that I've met is very different than the people you were introduced to. But it was...
Well, why don't we start there? So for some background context, if there are any newer listeners on Figuring Shit Out, we have been talking about integrating healing into the different facets of your life. So we've gone through a lot of different modalities of understanding how to heal and, different influences of spiritual development and discovery. And the inner child has been a big focal point. And I think that having my sister here today is something that my inner child is very comfortable with and wants to explore a lot. So let's start there. For background context, Angelica is adopted. So we are biologically not related, but very related by experiences and by household and all of the things. I think that just the story of you coming into the family the way that you did, like, it feels so divinely orchestrated in a way, because it just like I didn't exist, I wasn't even a thought, and our mother thought that she couldn't have kids. Like, doctors upon doctors had said, you will never have kids, like, it's just not happening, you might as well get your reproductive system out. And she didn't, because she knew that she would have a child. She was so dead set on having a child, but she also, was open to adopting. And then, they brought you into the world. And that's another thing. It almost feels like we were meant to be siblings. Like, I really do deeply feel that. And I think growing up, like, this could be a note to what happens when you grow up with someone so deeply, so closely, like they know and witness your whole life, and like how siblinghood is just so special in that way. But I never saw you as anything other than my sister. Like, I always saw you as deeply embedded into my existence. And it's crazy because like the world, I don't think, saw us that way.
No, of course. And like one of the most poetic things our father actually ever told me about us growing up was when you were born, it was like God saying, like, you're about to go through something and it's going to be really, really hard, but here's a friend, here's like a built-in buddy who is mm-hmm. going to be there with you. And at the end, like, that's how it's always been. It's
yeah.
like I might have, like, I might have no hope, but I have a sister.
Yeah.
Like, I have a person there that
yeah.
who can justify, and we can sit validate. Here and reflect that
yeah.
that happened. Like, oh, that happened.
I think, like, sharing your experience and your existence with another person, but also having it so individually oriented in, into your life, your uniqueness is so powerful. Like, I don't know who I'd be without you, without a sibling, just by the very nature of, I honestly think I'd be crazy. Like, I think that
I would be dead.
I think I would be crazy because, like, I always look around, to be quite honest, like, we came from quite a traumatic childhood. It was, like, really chaotic and just extremely dysfunctional in a million ways, which we'll probably talk about a bit here today. But I always look around at, like, the upbringing, and I have no words for how I'm not insane. Like,
it's exactly what you said. It's divinity. That's the only explanation. Even if, like, you could somehow justify it another way, like, you've said it yourself. We should hate each other. But we don't. I consider you one of my, like, best friends. You're one of my, like, people. Like, I have you on my phone as my favorite. Like, you're my favorite sister. And I can actually say that and mean it because I have a couple.
Yeah. I think that I'm realizing more and more as I find people who I feel, like, deeply seen with, and times in my life where I feel so internally disconnected from the world around me. Like, there are still those people who make me feel like myself. Like, those are my favorite people, and you are, like, at the very top of that list. But it's almost like you and I have had each other, but we've also been only children in our own ways, because I lived without you for quite a long time, you know? And, like, us growing up, we weren't super close. Like, you kept me at a distance, at yeah. a severe distance. Like,
yeah, we've talked about it that I'll admit, I knew from a young age that my brain was not functioning the same way. And I knew that if I allowed you to be as close as, like, we are now, you would have been stuck in the same turmoil that I was. And I couldn't have things that I loved because I saw what happened to the things that I loved. Like, growing up, they were taken away. I had too many things going on where I was playing, like, this is my child, referring to you, and, like, our mom needs our help, our dad needs our help. Like, I was parentified from, like, 9 years old to take care of you and make sure you were safe, but that didn't mean teach you how to, like, love me and how I needed to love you, but I did in my own way. Like, you knew that if anybody hurt you or came close to hurting you, I would be on them immediately. And
when you say from a really young age you knew that your brain didn't work well, like, what do you mean by that?
Well, as I've gotten older, I've realized, like, you know what, you weren't crazy. But growing up, I was told that, you know, you're toxic, you've been manipulated, your memories aren't real, mm-hmm. which was a great one. Like, so when you're told that, and by somebody you value, like, somebody who is, like, your caregiver, the person who is supposed to protect you and take care of you and who knows better, you eventually just believe that. I genuinely believed that I had memory problems, that I was over necessarily angry, that I was hateful, and that I was wrong, and that I was ungrateful. And I now know that, no, it's just I needed help, and I was screaming for it, and yeah. nobody could hear me the way I needed to be heard.
How do you hear yourself now?
Well, like, entering adulthood, there's a time that you have to put down the anger. Like, you can't be angry for your childhood anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't go back. I don't have a time machine. So you have to parent yourself. I had to unlearn all of the habits that I used to get attention and help from people. Like, there was no need to make somebody angry for them to pay attention mm-hmm. to me. There was no need to, like, push boundaries and manipulate. that those characteristics weren't needed, even though those were my survival tools as a child. And I can admit where I had like flaws and issues and things like that. But through obviously therapy, actually being able to have conversations with the people who did do me wrong and did harm me has been extremely helpful. And, you know, third parties, you, my best friend, like interacting with the people from my past that caused me so much grief and validating me, being like, yeah, you know what, that wasn't right.
Yeah.
Like what you went through and what you're going through now, like you're not wrong in this situation. Mm-hmm. Other people are. So that helps a lot with just the sins of my past and realizing that I'm not the weight of what I did. I'm who I am now, and I get to decide who that person is.
Yeah. Waking up and realizing that so much of your reactions to the life around you is a trauma response is almost disillusioning.
One of my most triggering moments while studying psychology was to realize that most of your personality is
shaped.
Yeah, shaped by your upbringing and your trauma that you dealt with, and realizing none of it's original. It's all fabricated. It was heartbreaking, but also at the same time, it made so much sense.
Yeah. I think what is interesting in piecing together how we should hate each other, but we don't. And what I mean by that is Angelica and I grew up in a really dysfunctional household. Our parents kind of pitted us against each other, and we definitely had our roles in surviving the chaos of it all. So us being close the way that we are isn't really normal in like textbook cases of our family's environment. And I think a big part of that is you saying that you were parentified from 9 years old, and to be parentified is essentially just like, because your household is so chaotic, because there's not a lot of caregiving freely given to the children kind of take on the role of being the caregiver to themselves and everyone around them, and sort of having these trauma responses like hypervigilance or, you know, lashing out to get the parents' attention in order to get what they need. Like a child will get what it needs no matter what. And, you know, our responses, I don't think were that different, because I was parentified in my own way. And I think you leaving and, you know, having that really broad space of time where you weren't around, you left when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah, you were entering your freshman year of high school, and I was supposed to have my senior year the same year. We were going to go to the same school. But I left 2 weeks before the end of my junior year.
Yeah, which we will talk about in a bit, because that's a really interesting story and a lot to learn from you living in West Virginia for 2 years of your high school experience. I think I like learned from you. I was like taking notes on, well, what can I do to make sure that I don't step out of line or something like doesn't, you know, happen because I did it. You know, it's like I almost internalized that blame as well, but in a really different way. And when, you know, you're talking, I'm noticing like so much of the internalized feelings that we have around like, well, maybe it is my fault, and maybe I could have done something different. They're really not that different. It's just the way that we transmuted them into ourselves in the world was really different, like just by nature of our personalities. Like you made more noise to distract from the noise, and I made no noise. My instinct was to hide and to be really small.
Yeah, there's actually like a study about like stress response and how do you respond. Like you've heard of like fight or flight, but the third one is like fawn. I was definitely the fighter. I was loud. If I thought you were doing something that wasn't right, I told you.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to just agree and be like, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. It's if you are making a mistake, I have to tell you, because I am now a parent, and the decisions that you make are going to affect me and my sister. Or like you asked for my opinion 6 months ago when I was testifying in court, but now you don't care what I have to say. So where that line was drawn in the sand wasn't necessarily clear, But I think that your take of like, I watched you, I saw what you were doing, and I'm like, that's good. You keep going home and cleaning the kitchen every day.
You had your role, I had my role, and our roles were almost cooperative in the environment until they weren't. And, you know, you left our home at 14 to go live with our grandparents in West Virginia. Do you want to give some color on this?
I can give so much color because I was the darkest thing in West Virginia. I will say living with our grandmother was the first time that I truly felt like I experienced like unconditional love. Like since our parents, since I got older, I could do no wrong in her eyes. She loved me regardless. And I'm not going to say that I didn't have to like unlearn a lot when I got there. I was dating a guy who was much too older for me. I was acting out, and like, I'm not going to tell that, but she never raised her voice, never was upset with me. But living in West Virginia itself was not a demographic that I was used to experiencing. I went to a high school / middle school. So from 6th grade to 12th grade, 500 kids, and I was the only person of color. And it was known. It was very clearly known. Some of the things I experienced, somebody put a baby, one of like the sex ed babies in my locker. One woman came up to me at a football game. She was actually a parent of one of my friends there. And she looked underneath my hood because it was raining. And she's like, "Are you an N-word?" And I'm like, "Oh, no. What?" Just completely flabbergasted that this mother would say this to me. Another core memory is a teacher coming up to me and putting her arm around me, and she's like, "How are you doing?" And I gave everybody like the standard, like, oh, you know, when the weird girl gets there in the middle of the school year, it's like, "Oh, I'm great, I'm adjusting fine." And this teacher looked me in the eyes and she's like, "My husband's black, how are you doing?" And I broke down. I was like, I am scared. I do not know why these people are so mad at me. I don't know why they hate me. Girls were starting rumors about me. Like it was really, really hard to integrate into a society where their only experience with a black person was like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like that's it. They expected me to be one way. And I was raised by two white parents. I am not the epitome of black culture. And I was not the ambassador. I was not there to teach them. I was there to learn and graduate and get out, which is exactly what I ended up doing.
So you voluntarily moved to West Virginia at 14. So it wasn't really super voluntary in the effect that you were a child and couldn't really make your own decisions. No.
It was planned for me to move over the summer. So I did have the expectation that I was going to leave, but I didn't expect to be like ripped from the school that I really loved and was my safe place for a really long time. My entire school career in Florida school was my safe space. I left in 3 days. I do remember that. I remember bringing my books in, went to school Monday, withdrew on Tuesday, was on a plane on Wednesday. And then we didn't talk. For like 6 months, almost.
You and I?
None of you. I didn't talk to anybody. I was mad. I was hateful. I was pissed that I was put on a plane. And even though it was like my decision and like it made me safe.
It was one of many poor options.
Yeah. So, and then I'm getting to the school. I'm truly meeting racism for the first time. Yeah. And like, just pure prejudice. So I was angry that this was my other option besides, you know, like living in dysfunctionality, but you know, at least I could go home.
Yeah.
And there wasn't screaming. There wasn't anybody needing anything from me. I could just exist. And that was comforting. But then I ended up getting like very comfortable just being by myself and having like one or two good friends and that's it.
Yeah, I've never actually thought about how that shaped your social personality, because I remember you always being so social. Like you always had so many friends and so many pockets of people. Like when we were growing up, you were like just loud and proud and in charge. And then I do actually remember a few years ago just realizing that you were actually very socially anxious. And then I started relating more to you and I was like, oh, you get it. Yeah, no, because you, you like were never really like that. Mm-mm. And so I never really thought about the fact that West Virginia was probably what molded that part of you. But do you feel like going from a place that you felt safe to be at home was worth the external strife that it caused? Like, would you still have chosen to feel safe at home, even if it meant you were going to go through some other type of traumatic thing being in the external world now instead of the internal world?
I think when it comes to shaping the person that I am, it was much better to have left and spent time with somebody who genuinely loved me. And I never questioned if and or but how much our grandmother cared about me. And we would stay up late just talking, and she could give me her I was never ashamed of anything I had to say to her, to the point where she's one of the most important people in my life. When I got my first apartment, she souped it up. She got everything on my little wish list that I could possibly need. Like, she treated me like I was her child, and I never felt any other way.
How did that flip the script for you and your life?
It helped a lot with feeling that everybody else was against me. Mm. Like, I was the toxic one. I was the one that was damaged because of this person who isn't technically related to me, can be so devoted and want the absolute best for me. Why can't I want the best for myself? Mm-hmm. Like, why do I want to end up like a druggie in a ditch? Why is this the life that I'm choosing when this person thinks the world of me and she sees me as a superstar and she wants me to achieve those dreams? And she would.
Yeah.
Like, our grandma would give the shirt off her back for us and, like, all of her grandkids, not just me specifically. But I think that her and I have a very special relationship because I lived with her and she got to experience things that she never got to experience with any of her other kids either. They were just her and mine.
Yeah. And it's so special to share that. What did you want to be when you were a little kid, when you grew up? What did you want to be?
I wanted to be so many things. When I was a really little kid, I wanted to be a chef. And then I wanted to be an event coordinator.
I remember that. You wanted to be a party planner.
Yes. I still, like, sometimes, like, I can throw a mean party. Like, I love that creative aspect. Then I got a little bit older and I wanted to be a wedding planner and a divorce lawyer because I thought that was ingenious.
Yeah, I don't know if I would hire you to plan my wedding if you were also plotting my divorce behind my back.
Just slip the card in your back pocket.
Yeah, it's bad vibes. Do you still want to pursue any of those childhood fantasies, or do you look at them as fantasies, or are you relearning what your inner child wants to do?
I was actually thinking about this like 3 days ago. So much of my life was put on hold. Like, it was get to the next step until you're safe.
Survival mode.
Get to the next step until you're safe. And I finally have, like, I'm in a relationship where if I fall, someone's going to catch me. I'm in a place where I really have a significant amount of time to kind of figure out what I want to do.
Yeah.
So now I am, like, reliving those, like, childhood fantasies. Like, oh, maybe I can do this. Or, oh, maybe I should go back to school and do this. It's like the possibilities are endless once you stop feeling like you're gonna die all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, it's sad. I just recently scheduled a doctor's appointment for the first time probably since I was like 16, 17, and like my grandma made me go to the doctor. Because now I realize, like, this is the only body I get. This is it. Like, you put it through 17 years of just torture because I couldn't take care of myself. I was too busy making sure that, like, I was gonna see tomorrow, and now tomorrow is here.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of things that need to be corrected, but there's time. Like,
yeah,
I'm 27. There's so much time.
I think that's like what you learn when you get out of survival mode is that your life actually isn't over. It just begins.
Yeah.
So much of your life is stored inside of your body and it's stored inside of your memories. And for the rest of your life, you will be uncovering things you didn't know even affected you. And so I'm really at this point where I've been out of the house now for like 5 years and been on my own. And now it's like all of these things that I haven't really, really felt are finally being felt. It's like they know that it's safe enough to come out. And I also feel that sense of open possibility of just like, I don't know who told me that it wasn't okay to dream. Waking up and realizing that life goes beyond the house that you grew up in. It goes so far beyond the house that you grew up in. And when you're growing up in that house, that's all you know. And I think that you and I, a big survival skill that you and I both had and both learned really well was to know that life existed outside of the house. And I always had this sense of hope. Like I always had this knowing that this was just not normal and this is not how normal people behaved or should grow up, realizing that I was going to have a life of my own that I got to create was always kind of what kept me going. And it was like, if I could just compartmentalize enough, if I could just survive long enough, like I would get out and I could do those things. But then you get out and you go to do those things and you're like, wait, I don't know how, like I can't. And you realize like how much has been kind of stored inside of you that hasn't fully been processed or felt. And then really it's either the healing begins or more proliferation of that trauma begins just by you recreating it unconsciously.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier of I am a great compartmentalizer. I have that skill down so bad. Like I can witness the most traumatic situation and feel nothing.
Is that compartmentalization or is that dissociation?
It is now at the point of dissociation. But I got so good at it, I didn't open the box back up. I didn't know how to cry. I didn't know how to allow myself to feel like the terrible things that I was feeling until like truly last year. Last year, my New Year's resolution was to take a video of myself every time I cried because I would. And I would.
That's so beautiful, actually.
It ended up helping. Like, because when I would get sad, it was always at the weirdest times. I would be watching like a commercial or somebody would, like a father would tell their daughter on TV that they were proud of them. And I would sob for like,
yeah, just like comes
10 randomly. Seconds and it would be over. And like, I would want to grab onto that emotion to like let more of it out. But my brain was like, nope, can't do that here. Not a safe place. Mm-hmm. Can't sleep here. Not a safe place. But watching myself cry and like understanding like that's not bad. Tears are not bad. From where we grew up, where crying was not tolerated. Crying made people more angry if they saw tears. So I got very good at like taking it, shoving it down. And now I have to unteach myself that habit. And I have to be like, it's okay to cry. It's fine to cry. There's places to cry. It's not like a Wendy's drive-thru. Don't cry in the speaker box, but you know, like in your car during your lunch break, if you need to let it out, you need to let it out. And that goes for all the other emotions. Like I was always very in touch with anger. Anger and me were best friends. Mm-hmm. Like any strife, any like perceived aggression was met with fire. Because if I knew if I didn't match your energy and quite frankly, go over it, you would overpower me. And I would be the 9-year-old girl, like, hiding in her closet. Like, I was always, like, hard. I was tough. I was, like, the typical tomboy. Mm-hmm. I didn't give in to that. And then I met my current partner, and he's allowed me to feel the things that I regressed and didn't want to share. And he's made me realize that that's not weakness. That's beautiful. It's beautiful that we are these complex beings with this wide range of emotions, and it doesn't have to be two options. I don't have to feel anger or feel nothing. I can feel happy, joy. A couple months ago, right, it was dead set of winter, first winter in Vermont, very cold, very sad. And I remember sitting on the couch looking at my partner Blake, and I said, I feel sad today. And his immediate reaction was, oh no, but like, what's wrong? I'm like, no, like I started laughing because like, I feel sad today and I haven't felt this in so long. I haven't felt sad. Like I spent most of my childhood thinking, like, I haven't had a happy day. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't had a good day in a really, really long mm-hmm. time. And it carried on to my adulthood where I didn't feel, I felt an overwhelming, like, sense of just numbness and sadness. And I hadn't felt it. That feeling became so unfamiliar to me that I had to, like, vocalize it to him. And I had to, like, tell somebody. And I was so proud of, like, who I become. Me 5 years ago would be so proud of the girl that I am now. And I know the woman 10, 15 years from now is going to be so proud. Like, I'm already so proud of this person. And it's kind of a crazy concept that I'm going to live and I'm going to survive. Yeah. Like, despite my best efforts, like, I'm going to be, like, out there. Like, I found somebody and, like, I have my sister. Like, my family isn't what I thought it was going to be. I never expected to really not have... I always thought I would have, like, a big family, we'd all get together, and I realized that I don't have to be the daughter in that picture. I can be any member of that family. I can make that family. And I'm so glad for the people that I've collected in my adulthood and, like, the relationships I formed with family and not family, because those are my people. That's my true home now.
That's really beautiful and, like, really beautiful to hear. And I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Healing, I think, has began in deciding to press play. That actually leads me to the point of, like, remembering history. So something that I feel like I've noticed as I've talked to all of our family members at different points in time is really that, like, everyone has their own version of things that happened. And I think that all of them have some validity and truth to them, in that the person who is perceiving what is happening has their own internal experience, which colors it completely. And so you might think, like, this person said this thing to me in this way and it deeply impacted me. And it definitely did. Like, that feeling that you have is valid, but the person who said it doesn't remember saying it in that way. They don't know what they did. They don't know how they affected you. Like, there's this, like, lack of responsibility, it feels like. I think in everyone in a situation where things are dysfunctional and chaotic, there's some justification for some of it, or else what's it for? And so blame gets pointed every which way. And so I feel like whenever I try to figure out what exactly happened, because that's been a journey of mine for so much of my life, is like, where did things go so wrong? What happened? Who are my parents? Like, who is my sister? Who am I outside of this whole mess? Like, who are these people individually, so that I can then, like, go and tell my own story and figure out what my own truth is? Because I don't think that I really knew that truth growing up. I just observed and, like, tried to stay as silent as possible to, like, get through it. So I'm curious how you feel about that, like, everyone's version of history being slightly different and you having your truth, but knowing that someone else's truth can be really valid for them, but at the same time, like, not yours. Like, how do you coexist in a world where things aren't as you see them, but they're still as valid as it feels when you went through them?
I think a lot of my childhood, I downgraded my experiences because I was told multiple times that no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen that way. To the point now when I do have those, like, feelings of what did they just mean? What did that person just say to me? I have gotten very good at just taking the words, reading them out, and deciding if that is worth my anger, if that's worth a reaction. To the point where, like, I take things so literally now. Like, I will jot down facts of a situation. Like, if you and I are having an argument, I will write down what you said and read it out loud and read it in my tone and think about 8 different ways that you could possibly say this and decide which one makes the most sense, like, based off of the person that I know who you are. I think I give a lot of people, like, severe benefit of the doubt. Like, I trust that you are not saying something so negative, or you're mm-hmm. not saying something to hurt me. And like I said, like, you can't just immediately jump to rage. You really have to slow down and think, like, is this worth it? Is this exactly what this person means? Is this person mean me harm? Has this ever been a part of their character? I know that what I went through as a child isn't necessarily what my parents felt raising me.
Mm-hmm.
Like their perspective on the situation. And yeah. I've taken time to like stand in their shoes, but at the same time, I don't think I would have reacted in the same way. Like, I feel like there was other options, but that comes from their traumatic past yeah. and what they've dealt with. So I think I've given some grace. Like, I don't hate either of our parents. Like, I hope they find the peace that they're looking for.
I think that there's a lot of responsibility in being a child of trauma and being a child of dysfunction. And the first responsibility is to not make it your identity and to try to disconnect from the fact that this was your life at one point. It's not anymore. Knowing that it's not anymore, you get to create it. You get to choose. You get to heal. That's a really big part of it. And for a very long time, I defined myself by my circumstance growing up, and it isolated me from other people because I felt like, well, if other people couldn't understand the depths of that, then they like really wouldn't be able to understand me because I was so identified with my own pain and story. And so much of healing for me has been unwinding the identification with it to validating what happened to me, but knowing that it doesn't have to continue happening. I don't have to continue reliving it. I don't have to continue perpetuating it in different ways in my own life and living in a survival mode because that is what I knew. Just because it's what I knew and it's familiar does not mean it's safe. And reteaching myself what safety actually means. And then I think the second responsibility of being a child of dysfunction is just to not recreate it and to choose differently. And I think part of that is having empathy for circumstances outside of yourself to the point where you can say, I know that the reason that you hurt me is because you were hurting, but, and this is the important part, this is what I'm learning, but it's not okay for you to continue hurting me. It's not okay for you to justify hurting me anymore. And when you're an adult, it's now your chance to protect that child that didn't get the protection. And every time you allow that child inside of you to be hurt again by a similar circumstance, it's damaging to that knowing of the responsibility that comes with undoing that. It's like you break the cycle. Like when you are a person growing up into adulthood and choosing to build your life, you are now choosing to be the cycle breaker. And every choice that you make is a bid for that or act against it. How do you feel like you're breaking the cycle?
It's definitely not easy because some of it is so unconscious.
Yeah.
That you don't even realize that until you're already knee deep in, you know, being like 13 in your bedroom, like screaming at someone to love you. And I struggled a lot most of my like young adulthood. I think just now, like in my late 20s, I finally started to uncover like, oh, you're reacting like this because of what you've been through. All right, well, just because you hurt me in the past doesn't mean it's my job now to stop you from hurting me. Just because I've let you in, I have to set a boundary of how far I'm going to allow you to break my walls and come back into my fortress. And I think I built up too good of walls for a while where I didn't, like I said, I didn't allow myself to feel anything. I just kept going, kept moving, kept going forward, had very superficial relationships where I almost like made them out to be like the people that hurt me. And I think that's one of the things that I worked on the last couple of years is not everybody was my enemy. Not every partner I had, not every friendship I had, not everybody was as evil as I remembered them. They were just, it just didn't work out. It just wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right person because now I am with somebody who I can honestly say is my other half, is my person. And he's even caught me in my, like, going back into the dysfunctionality that I was raised in, that I was used for, that there's almost a comfort in.
Yeah, there that. Is. It's almost sick, yes. But it's true. Like, there is such a comfort in the spiral because it's, like, so familiar. You yeah. know it so well that it's, like, so addictive. It almost feels addictive. It's like one thing goes wrong and it sucks you right in, and then it's just so easy to get right back into the place that you feel like you started in, but you're not there. You have to remember you're not there. I just spent the last week of my life remembering I was not there, but genuinely, like, it's so easy. It's so easy to just go right back.
Exactly. Like, I still have to be constantly reminded is that you are here, you are loved, you are valid. Like, you don't have to be loud to be loved. You don't have to scream to be loved. You deserve it for just existing. Like, you don't, that's not an earned item. Yeah. It's not food, it's not water, but it is what every person needs to survive. You cannot exist on this planet as a functioning member of society without, like, unconditional love, as
without bonding with other people yeah. and letting other people in. How far along do you feel on your journey of forgiveness to the people who hurt you?
I've healed my inner child. It's an ongoing process. You're never done. Once you're a trauma holder, you're never done. You're never going to be finished. There's never going to be a moment 60 years from now where I sit down and be like, you know what?
Forget everything.
it's going to be a constant battle because you're always going to find new little things that you didn't know were triggers for you. You'll never be done, but I do feel like my inner child, she's worked some stuff out. She's made leaps and bounds progress that I didn't even know was possible without, like, intense therapy. Now my inner teenager,
yeah,
she's still a little loud.
Yeah,
she still has abandonment issues. She still has, like, things that she needs to work through. And we're getting there. We are slowly getting there. And there's also a part of, like, my inner adult, my younger adult, that I didn't get to experience correctly because I was still in, like, the survival mode.
Yeah.
So now I am also trying to take care of her and teaching her, like, the skills that I wish I was taught as a child, like self-reliance, like financial responsibility, like planning for your future, because now, wake up, girl, you have one. And that's, like, a hard thing to recognize, but it's a beautiful thing to recognize. Like,
you're excited.
Yes, I get to live, basically. I get yeah. to have a future. And that wasn't something I necessarily considered when I was 17 living in my grandparents' house.
Yeah. This is kind of a pivot, but I feel like you have always used humor as a way to cope. And I always found that a bit jarring because I was such an emotionally absorbent child that when you would use humor to cope, I'd be like, Angelica, I cannot believe that you just said that and joked about it. And it almost just made everything kind of feel like a joke. And I almost think that that's what kind of helped me move it along and realize that it was so ridiculous because you would use humor as a mechanism of getting through it. And I'd be like, this isn't funny, but it's almost like so not funny that it's kind of funny. And you and I do that now. Like we go back and forth and joke about this trauma that we share and we're bonded through in a way that makes other people be like, well, I'm glad that you can joke about it because what the fuck? How do you think that helped you growing up? And how do you think that may be something that is too avoidant? Where do you think the balance is with humor?
If you don't laugh about it, you'll cry about it. I learned that very, very young. If I can't break this massive thing, boulder that has hit me, and after the last one, if I can't break it up into little chunks, little digestible pieces, I'm going to be crushed. Like, if I can't find even, like, a small thing of getting, like, a groan from somebody or getting you to laugh about something, then I'm going to be crushed under the weight of everything that we just went through. Like, you have to look at it.
You,
like,
turned it into something else.
Yes, you have to. Like, it's almost like my childhood didn't happen to me. it happened to some other girl. And
yeah,
I
feel that. Yeah.
Get to write a story about her.
Yes, I feel that, but just in a really different way. I feel like I always thought if I could observe what was going on around me and like write something about it or make something out of it, poetry or words that sounded beautiful at the very least, then like it was worth something. Because otherwise, then these crazy people were just like fucking crazy for no reason.
Exactly.
And it's like, well, but why?
I have to get something out of this.
Yeah, like, no, I think it's so it's just like a coping mechanism. We have talked a lot about the childhood and how it's shaped you into who you are and a new zest and a hope for life that wasn't there. What are you excited for?
Children. Kids are miraculous.
Yeah.
Like they're just learning how to develop in this bizarre world that isn't the same. Like my kids won't have the same world that I had. Mom didn't have the same world that I had as a child. So we all get to experience this. And I think that helped a lot with my healing, was realizing I was the first kid. And technically you were like, again, we aren't that far apart, but my parents were learning to be parents just as fast as I was learning how to be a person. So
yeah,
the mistakes and the tribulations that they went through, it was because they've never done this before. They had to go off of what their parents did and hope to God that worked. And I think knowing that and like having a list of, you know what, I don't like, there's things about our childhood that I would take. Like I would have boundaries with my kids. There's ideas that makes sense. But at the same time, I also know that, like, I don't want to raise my voice. I shouldn't have to. I don't want to be my child's best friend. But at the same time, I want them to know that they are welcome anytime. And I think knowing that you have a home to go to during Thanksgiving is such a vital part of existing. Like, we just had, like, our Thanksgiving back in November, and like the amount of like love I felt in our home for the first time in a really, really long time was breathtaking. And I remember like I was exhausted, but I was still so happy that, you know, I like this little life. Like, this is truly like my family, and it's really starting to take fruition.
It's so strange reacting to love in adulthood. Like, I think I'm realizing that I'm still getting used to the fact that people have functional families who do holidays together, and they're
so
loving
cute
and beautiful and wonderful, and like that has been their tradition for life. Like, we didn't really have that. It was always either extremely stressful, there was some war being fought over who was going to go where and when it was going to happen, and just so that we could sit there and be stressed out anyways. Like, there was so much happening. The oddness of realizing that normal love, healthy love exists. It's out there. It's real. Like, you're deserving of it. Even though your entire life you had to work for love, for survival, for your needs to be met. Do you think that there is a time where that gap will close in your life? Do you look forward to that time, or do you feel like you'll be, you know, piecing those things together for a while? How do you feel about that?
I am unboxing those boxes slowly but surely, creating that cohesion and that environment for myself and my future family, offspring, all that stuff. So I'm welcoming it. Do I see it in the near future? Probably not. Like, there's still some stuff that we have to go through. There's the attic that needs to be cleaned out before we can make a commitment, like that broad of a commitment to be like, yes, I'm never going to feel this again.
Well, not never feel it again, but just look at the healthy parts of life as normal parts of life rather than healthy parts of life.
I don't want to. Like, what I went through is so important to the person that I am. It's my entire personality. Like, not the trauma, but our upbringing is the reason why I am who I am. And I am at the point in my healing that I could say I love myself and I love the person that I am, which is definitely not something I would have said 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, even probably, I would say like 5 years ago, I wouldn't refer to myself as somebody that I loved. And I think that was a big thing, was realizing that not only am I somebody who's worthy of love, that I love myself. And I spit on the people that tell you that you need to love yourself before someone else can love you, because that helps so much.
Yeah.
When you don't get that as a child and you are constantly looking for any sense of love or validation and constantly seeking that, you don't know, you don't have the skills. Like, that's like asking me to speak Mandarin. I can't. But those around me at 26, 27 have taught me what that looks like, and being able to be a part of families that have that dynamic and being able to adopt them as my own. Like, that's the dream.
I think I would tailor that to, instead of, if you don't love yourself, you can't be loved, or what is the saying?
It's nobody can love you if you can't love yourself.
Right. Yeah. I would say no one can love you if you're not open to being loved. That's the only way that you can't be loved, is if you're not open to it. When you're open to being loved, you learn how to be loved, and you learn how to love yourself in different ways. And I really think that you can only learn so much on your own before you have to coexist in relationships and learn with another person and with other people. I feel like in my journey, I loved myself as much as I could on my own before I needed to go further. And that's usually when the relationship finds you and things come into your life that ask you, okay, how are you going to act now? Are you still going to continue learning how to love yourself in new and different ways? So yeah, no, I think that's really special. What do you love about yourself?
I am the strongest person I know. Like, I found out that I could do it all on my own. And now I'm in a place where I don't have to, which is really nice. Like, taking off that role is very nice, and allowing myself to feel all those things. But also, I'm really funny. That should be mentioned. Really, I'm hysterical.
You are really funny. What is your happiest memory from childhood? Amidst all the noise of pain, how did you find peace? What did you like?
I liked our holidays. I liked the good ones. I liked Christmas, where Grandpa would put on that silly Santa Claus costume and I would scream, like, that's not Santa. Santa isn't real. I liked spending our summers in West Virginia and our grandparents up there doting on us. I liked watching Netflix with you, and back when Netflix had those DVDs, and we would do like TGI Friday nights, and we would get a bunch of junk food together and just sit and watch. We both would pick out a movie and we would just sit and watch with our mom, just being together.
One of my favorite memories is, wait, this is like kind of sad. All of them have like a little sad hint to them. Like, one of my favorite memories is waking up on Christmas and there were all these presents under the tree that mom had gotten us. Yeah. And it was all like little snacks and food that she bought with her EBT card.
Yes. And she, like, still has that habit.
No, but she spent like the entire month's worth of EBT groceries on Christmas presents, like just candy for us. And I remember like opening every single one and just being so excited and happy, because I was like, this is the best day ever. But looking back, I'm like, oh my God, like, she probably didn't eat for the rest of
she
the
didn't
month.
If you're never sad, you never get to know how good it is when you're happy. There's still a lot of healing to go. I still have a lot.
Well, you're never gonna be done. You're never gonna have it figured out.
If you get your act together. No. What is it then?
If you spend your whole life trying to get your act together, then you don't have a life. You have an act. So go and live your fucking life.
Hi guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode. It got cut short because me and my sister spent the last like 15 minutes just absolutely fucking around, and I don't feel like that was necessary to be part of the episode. But with that being said, I hope you enjoyed it. If you are a frequent listener of Figuring Shit Out, make sure to rate the podcast on your preferred streaming platform. Let me know what you thought about this episode or any episodes that spoke to you or touched you. I will see you guys next week. And I am so grateful to have this space to share. Remember, if you spend your whole life trying to get your act together, then you don't have a life. You have an act. So go and live your fucking life. Mwah. I love you.
You gotta look for the redeeming feature. You gotta look for things to appreciate. You gotta find a reason to make it okay where you are. No, I've gotta strive and struggle and try. That's what I've been taught. Growth and expansion is my quest. No, that's inevitable. Whether it comes easy or hard is the question.
The horrible truth is that it's an inside job. That if you're going to get that love and that respect that you've just so long, that connect, that union starts inside.
To every experience of growth, there is an equal and an opposite. And that equal and an opposite is what drives you to that light. So you have to start inwards. You have to start first within yourself.